We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. 1 year ago, Haiti was hit by a devastating earthquake. The official death toll has been placed at 230,000. 180,000 homes were destroyed. More than a million people are still living in tents, and over 1,000 of these tent camps are located in the capital alone. International donors have promised significant money for the recovery effort, but less than half of that has been provided. And the question that stands now, and a lot of people ask, is why is it that now a year after the quake, there has been so little in the way of recovery in Haiti, and what lies ahead? We'll try to take up these questions this morning in this hour of Focus with our guest, Alex Dupuy. He's a sociologist at Wesleyan University. That's in Connecticut. He chairs the African American Studies Program and has done a lot of writing and research on social, economic, and political developments in Haiti and the Caribbean. And he's joining us this morning by telephone. As we talk, questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We hope that people can keep their questions on the topic and try to be brief so we can keep things moving along. But you're certainly welcome to call. Also, if you'd like to send an email, you can do that too, will-talk@illinois.edu. And Professor Dupuy, hello.
Hello. Yes. Good morning.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us today.
You're welcome.
I realize this is an awfully big and complicated question to start with, but I think that it is the question I'm sure that a lot of people ask when they hear the kinds of numbers that we're talking about in terms of people homeless, people killed, how much reconstruction there's been. Why is it that now, a year after, given that there are many people there trying to provide relief and at least some money has gone into the country, why is it that it seems there has been so little in the way of recovery?
Well, it's a complicated factor, obviously a complicated issue. There are many factors that account for that. The first, I think, is the extent of the damage to the infrastructure of Haiti, roads and ports and so on, communication, buildings, you know, of the numbers of buildings that you mentioned were destroyed, where most of the government ministries' offices were destroyed. So, and the government is operating in makeshift or in temporary housing. So that's one factor. The other factor, of course, is the absence of significant funds, but also coordination among the donors and the various organizations that are operating in Haiti. From my understanding, from the data that I see, only about 10% of the money that was pledged has been delivered to Haiti. But of that 10%, not all of it has been spent. And the IHRC, the Interim Haiti Recovery Commission, that is in charge of setting priorities and, you know, moving ahead with the reconstruction plans, has been very slow to get off the ground. The IHRC, for those who don't know, is a commission that is co-chaired by former President Bill Clinton and Haitian Prime Minister Jean-Max Bellerive, and it's comprised of foreign and Haitian members. But they've been very slow in making decisions and setting priorities and getting off the ground. Largely because of funds, but largely also because of stalling in terms of the projects that they want to implement, and I guess also part of it has to do with who is calling the shots. It's mostly the foreign members of the commission who really are in charge of the process, and they have given out contracts to firms, and some Reconstruction has begun. For example, the international airport at Port-au-Prince was rebuilt and is now functional for the most part. The rubble has been cleared from the major arteries around the capital city, but most of the rubble in Port-au-Prince itself has not been cleared, and you can't really start rebuilding unless you get rid of the rubble. You know, if it's a it's a scene. If one goes to Port-au-Prince, one is simply awestruck by the extent of the damage, especially in the most the central parts of the city. And for any reconstruction to occur, the rubble has to be cleared, and that's been part of the problem. Only less than 5% of the rubble has been cleared away. And you know, if one looks at other examples of devastations, the estimates are that it'll take about a year and a half to 2 years to clear the rubble completely and begin a full-fledged reconstruction of houses, buildings, and infrastructure, and so on. So there is there are both political, bureaucratic, but also the effects of the devastation that have combined to slow the process of the reconstruction.
Well, just to come back to one point that you mentioned, because also it's something that I have read that some of the Haitians who are members of the Reconstruction Commission that you mentioned say that they have not really been included in the process. Do you think that that's actually true?
That is absolutely correct. The Prime Minister has complained about that. The many members, several members of the Haitian Commission have written a public letter to complain that they're excluded from the decision-making process. They're not even part of the meetings that are being held. And also the priorities that are being set are not necessarily those that Haitians would necessarily endorse or advocate if they were to be included in the process. That is, the priorities were pretty much set by the international community writ large, and by this I mean the major countries who are involved in Haiti, which include the United States, France, Canada, Brazil, and the major international financial institutions, the World Bank, the IMF, the USAID, and the IADB, the Inter-American Development Bank. And they're the ones, basically, who have been setting priority for Haiti for a long time. And their agenda, leaving aside for now the removing the rubble and reconstruction process, is to continue to advocate for Haiti policies that have not proved successful in the past. And so that is another source of discord between at least grassroots and people, civil society organizations in Haiti, and the international community. And and the government of Haiti is also very weak and doesn't have much capacity to make decisions on its own, because it's entirely dependent on the international community for a significant portion of its operating budget. Up to 60% of the Haitian public budget it depends on foreign aid. So you have a government that's hamstrung. You have an elite in Haiti that also is reluctant to basically go against the status quo, because they're benefiting from it. So you have all these both structural, political, and ideological factors that are combining to create a sense of complete blockage and inaction.
There are apparently several thousand international aid agencies operating in Haiti. Now, I gather that maybe about 20 of them are really big, the big ones.
Correct. The big ones.
But there are a lot of smaller ones. Yes. And I think also one of the things that some people there in Haiti have actually said is really a problem is that while some of these NGOs are doing good work,
correct,
others, they're just getting in the way.
Who
decides how all that gets managed?
That's you put your finger on part of the problem as well. That is, there is hardly any coordination among the NGOs, and there is hardly any coordination between them and the Haitian government. The vast majority of them operate independently of the Haitian government. They are not accountable to the Haitian government, and this is something that Prime Minister Belrive also complained about. He said it's not that they object to having NGOs present, but the government would like to know what they're doing underground and to whom they are accountable and set some guidelines for their operations, but that has never happened. Now, this goes back, there's a history to that as well, because this was a deliberate policy, especially in the late 80s and 90s, for donor governments to bypass the Haitian government and give directly to NGOs, which, you know, encouraged the growth of these NGOs as a substitute for the Haitian state, for the Haitian government. So consequently, by privatizing those services essentially to NGOs, the Haitian government has failed in its responsibilities to be able to deliver the essential services such as, you know, water, sanitation, and health care, education, and so on, jobs, housing to the citizens of Haiti. And so this basically reliance on NGOs creates tremendous opportunities for foreign NGOs to come to Haiti and do the work that they do, and some of it is quite helpful. But at the same time, it also makes reinforces Haiti's dependence on these kinds of external support, and the food aid also that's been part of that program has hurt Haitian farmers to be able to continue to produce food for the national market, and because the food aid is coming in at much lower costs than could be produced in Haiti. And as a result, Haiti went from in the up to the 1980s up to 86, 87, being able to produce 80% of the food it consumed at that time, to now only being able to produce 42% of the food it consumes, and all the rest of it is imported primarily from the United States. Moreover, rice production, in which Haiti was also self-sufficient, Haiti is now the fourth largest importer of rice in the world from the U.S., and most of the rice that it imports is subsidized U.S. rice. And even President Clinton, for example, admitted publicly in testimony to the Senate Foreign Committee that the policies of free trade and trade liberalization and removing tariffs on Haitian agriculture and other imports were good for his farmers in Arkansas, but detrimental to Haiti. So you have this combination of factors of a weak state that whose capacity has been weakened even further since the earthquake. You have the privatization of services encouraged by foreign donors, and Haiti has been termed now the Republic of NGOs, because indeed NGOs are in charge of providing services to the population that receives it. And the other policies that have been followed have further weakened an already weak and poor economy. So when you combine all these factors, the task of rebuilding such an economy is obviously daunting, but then you have all these contradictory interests that are at work that are further causing, if you will, a stalemate, basically, and very little is being done.
Pardon me. I was just going to introduce you again to people who are listening. I thought perhaps people might have joined us here in the last few minutes. Our guest is Alex Dupuy. He is a sociologist. He chairs the African American Studies Program at Wesleyan University. He's written a lot on Haiti and the Caribbean, and we're talking about Haiti a year after that devastating quake 1 year ago tomorrow. The country was hit by the worst earthquake in a couple of hundred years. 230,000 people were killed, 180,000 homes destroyed, more than a million people now still living in very bad temporary shelter, and the prospects don't seem to be terribly good here in the near term. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And you can also email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. We do have a caller here. Why don't we bring them into the conversation, someone here where we are in Champaign County. Hello?
Hi, yes, and cholera rampant, too. I'm incredibly frustrated by this because it seems to me, well, there's just a news item. I guess I'll tag it. I'll hinge my... remarks on this. Preval's candidate was just sort of a UN group studied, I believe it was a UN group, might have been Carter administration, said that there were enough irregularities in Preval's picked candidate that he should be disqualified. So the runoff should be between the singer and the previous prime minister, I guess. I'm not sure. But the specifics aren't that important. But what I wonder about is why there is so little commentary about the fact that the most popular party in Haiti was not allowed to run, along with about six other marginal sort of left groups, were not allowed to run. This was set up by Preval. If we see that he's using shenanigans to get his try to get his favorite candidate in, why don't we question his whole electoral commission? But the problem is that the UN has been going along with it, along with the French and the U.S. The UN, I question the UN's role even in Africa now in being a fair broker of elections. I've gotten so disgusted with the reporting. I'm thinking of making a comparison to the Daily Show's guy saying Al Jazeera is the only network that's reporting this story. Al Jazeera reports when they lead off a story on Haiti, they always start with the Electoral Commission. Now, you hear this on Democracy Now! Too, but NPR doesn't. NPR has never done it. The major networks don't do it. It's just outrageous, and I'm getting apoplectic here, so I don't know how you'll come around on this, because obviously in this country, Aristide had been demonized. He was called a voodoo dictator and all that crap. So, but I mean, how can?
I share your frustration, and I'm glad you raised the question, and I wanted to turn to the guest because we definitely need to talk about the election that took place last fall, and in the midst of all of the people trying to deal with this destruction, and as the caller said, also a major cholera outbreak. They had an election. And initially, I think the government said, well, the top two people was the candidate of the ruling party, and this woman who, if she was elected, would be the first woman president of Haiti. And now, just recently, I believe it was the OAS, the Organization of American States, said there were a lot of problems with the election, and in fact that the ruling party's candidate, Jude Celestin, should not be in the runoff, and it should be Mirland Manigat and Michel Martelly, the musician. What do you think is going to happen with all of this?
Well, right. The elections were certainly flawed, and the OAS team that brought in statisticians and other election experts from the United States to Jamaica and other countries to do a recount of the balloting, and at least a recount not of the entire election, but of those that determined the first three who were declared who received the most votes. Those were Mirland Manigat, a senator, and Michel Martelly, the singer, and Jude Celestin, the candidate for the Unité Party of President Preval. And initially, the CEP, the Provisional Electoral Council, reported that the first two top candidates who would then go to a runoff were Manigat and Celestin. And they put Manigat at 31-some% of the vote. Celestin, they gave him some 22%, and they gave Martelly 21-some%. The OAS team recounted those votes and found irregularities and now declared in their report that Manigat remained at 31%. But the order was reversed between Celestin and Martelly. Martelly is now at 22% and Celestin at 21%. And that report has to be given to President Preval, who has to accept it officially. And the Electoral Council then has to decide whether to agree to approve or not approve the results of the recount, the recalculation by the foreign technicians. And so that's where it's at right now. No, as far as I know, Prevail has not officially received that report, or he hasn't admitted receiving that report. And the CEP has not yet said whether it would accept the results of this recounting. So one will have to wait and see what happens. The other candidates who had participated in the election, there were 19 some candidates, they had asked for the entire election to be void and to start over. They had asked for the formation of a provisional government, which the international community did not support. And so the question is whether there will be, in fact, a second round, and who among the three top vote-getters will go to that second round. And either way, there's likely to be some unrest as a result of this new ordering of the top two candidates, but that remains to be seen. And so assuming that there is a runoff, either Mariga or Martelly, if that's what happens, will become elected president. But the caller raised another issue about the Lavalas party that was excluded, and it is certainly the case that Aristide's party was excluded from the balloting, and the justifications for that were not very solid, and that certainly created a sense of unfairness and in the electoral process. I'm not sure that one can continue to claim that Aristide's party is still the most popular party. I haven't seen evidence for that, but nonetheless, it still remains a significant political force in Haiti. Whether their candidate would win elections is still in doubt, is doubtful. But they're not even given the chance to run, so that's one of the factors that has marred this election from the outset. And Prevail is trying to control the process so that his party will remain in power. But even without this, even if his Celestin is ruled out and he doesn't participate in the runoff, it's very likely that Prevail's party will retain control of parliament. And in that case, they will then have most likely be the ones to choose the prime minister. And the prime minister in Haiti is the person who forms a government with the consent of the president and so on. And so his party will still retain considerable leverage if it controls parliament and if the prime minister comes from his party. But all that is still speculative at this point because it's unclear what the CEP is going to rule. And if the CEP, if the Electoral Council goes in favor of Celestin, then one can expect more demonstrations, more unrest, because then they will have lost whatever little credibility they had left.
Well, given the enormous challenges the country faces, given the fact, as you explained a little bit earlier, that perhaps the international community has one set of priorities for the country and may not be what the people there in Haiti would choose as their priorities.
Right.
Does it really matter very much whether Ms. Maniga or Mr. Martelly become president?
No.
No.
Not at all. Because whoever is president will have to follow the dictates of the international community because they basically control the purse. Hmm. And this is one of the interesting but yet at the same time complicated issues because you have a government that goes through the motions of parliamentary democracy, of elections and so on, but that government is not really accountable to the people of Haiti. It's more accountable to those who really set priorities and fund, Haiti provide significant funds for the Haitian government to operate and so on, and they are certainly not accountable to the Haitian people. So in that sense, you have a democracy without muscle, because the people are not really in a position to set the agenda. And even when they do, or when they did, for example, with the election of Aristide in 1991, the first time around, the international community tried to to prevent that agenda from being implemented. Aristide was overthrown. 7 months later, he went into exile, came back in 94. And it's a long story, but from that point on, my view is that Aristide became part of the problem, not part of the solution. But at any rate, the dilemma remains. That is, whoever is elected, and no matter what the popular sentiment would be for policies that they would like to see implemented, and if one listens to the voices of the many, you know, popular organizations, grassroots organizations that represent various cross sections of the Haitian population, their ideas for what the priorities ought to be are very different than those set by the international community and the Haitian elite that is in partnership with the foreign international community. So there you have a divide between those who hold political and economic power and those who don't. Haiti is not unique in that sense, but it's particularly striking in the context of a country like Haiti.
Yeah. Our guest is Alex Dupuy. He is a sociologist at Wesleyan University. He chairs the African American Studies Program, has written a lot on social, economic, political developments in Haiti and the Caribbean, and we're talking about Haiti. A year ago, the country was hit by a very serious earthquake. 230,000 people were killed. That's the official death toll. Many, many homes were destroyed, and now we have more than 1 million people who are still living in tents. There has been a significant amount of international aid promised, but as our guest has explained, only a small part of that has been provided so far. And if past efforts like this are any indication, probably only a small part of it ever will be provided. Questions welcome, 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Well, to go back to the point that you were making there just a moment ago, if what sort of policies would the people who would be representing more the interest of those that are not in power, not the elites, not the people in government, and if they were able to implement their policies, what would they do and that would so that the international community would be so opposed to?
Well, for one, there would be a call for rescinding the free trade policies, the neoliberal policies that have been the structural adjustment policies. Those are the terms, that technical terms that are used basically for free market policies that have dismantled the protective tariffs that even under the Duvalier regime existed, for example, for rice production and for other crops that made Haiti nearly self-sufficient in food production. So there's been certainly a major call by many organizations that represent the interests of Haitian farmers to protect Haitian agriculture against cheaper foreign imports that come from countries that heavily subsidize their agriculture, like the United States and Canada and other countries. And so that would be one major change. And ironically, as I said, former President Clinton recognized that those policies have devastated Haitian agriculture, especially rice production, but yet his IHRC is continuing to push the same policies that he himself recognized have failed or have been detrimental to Haiti. So there would be certainly a call to rescind those policies and subsidize Haitian agricultural production, support farmers with low-interest loans, with government grants, with infrastructure support, and so on, to make it possible for Haiti to achieve more or less food security. Because a lot of the imports now, a lot of the money that Haiti spends in importing goods is primarily goes for food, which creates an imbalance in the Haitian budget and makes it even more vulnerable having to be subjected to IMF regulation and so on. So that's one issue. The second, of course, would be to prioritize the development of local jobs to provide health care for the population, to expand access to education, to rebuild the education system, to encourage the development of small agro-industrial firms in Haiti, rather than, as is the case now, when aid is being given, most of the money goes to foreign contractors to come and deliver services to Haiti without necessarily benefiting or allowing those capacities to be built in Haiti itself. So there would be a demand for a government to play a much bigger role in meeting and addressing and the needs of the majority of the population, which currently is not the case. In the assembly industry, for example, there's been a demand for wages to be made on par with other wages in the region, because currently the assembly industry is the largest industrial sector in Haiti. But if one knows anything about the assembly industry, the garment industry, so in particular, they operate on the basis of a contract between foreign investors and Haitian partners. The Haitian partners build the factory shells, they hire the workers, and the foreign investors send the supplies, the raw materials, the technology, and so on, and they export all those goods back to the U.S. market on the basis of a quota. Excuse me. And the wages that Haitians receive are the lowest in the hemisphere. And those wages are not sufficient to raise them above poverty. And the unions, the workers involved in these organizations, have been struggling for years, decades, to increase the minimum wage so that they can at least earn a wage that's above the poverty level. But that has been blocked by both the investors, the World Bank, and the U.S. and the Haitian government, on the grounds that if they were to do so, that would deter, would push these industries to go elsewhere. So that's one thing that would change if you had a government, and this is one of the things that Aristide tried to do when he first came to power, was to raise the minimum wage of the workers involved in this industry. But even at its best, that industry only employed less than 8% of the labor force, urban industrial labor force, and that was recognized even by the World Bank, that these activities don't contribute much to the rest of the Haitian economy, because all the profits that are made in these industries are repatriated. And they receive, moreover, tax exemption from both the Haitian government and the U.S. government to look at their operations in Haiti. So it's a boon for the investors in those industries and for the Haitian elite entrepreneurs who participate in them, but it does very little for the workers in those industries and the rest of the economy. In fact, what it encourages is people to migrate to the urban centers where these enterprises are located, which led to the bloating of the capital city of Port-au-Prince and had the sort of devastating effects of the earthquake, because most of these people were living in very poorly constructed dwellings. So that's one other set of priorities that probably would be reordered or rethought if you had a government that was really responsive and listening to the priorities of the Haitian population. Mm.
We have another caller. Let's talk with him. This is sure. Someone in Oswego on our toll-free line. This is line 4. Mm-hmm. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Haiti's got a problem with their government. I don't know. To me, it looks like, as an American citizen, it looks like there's no government. I mean, there's all the reports that I've seen and read on the Internet and other places. It seems like there's no one central government that's running a place to set things up. I think it would be, there's a lot of people that have reported on it. Sean Penn, a celebrity, has been over there reporting constantly on what's going on, and it just sounds like it's total chaos. The money has come up that people have been sending over there, come up short, or should I say missing. Nobody seems to know where it's going. A lot of just disorganized stuff. So it's a mess, and it doesn't seem like there's any one central area that somebody's should be, organizing or something, so to speak. I don't know. It's like if you want to give Haiti money, it's like you don't know where it's going. It's kind of hard to do that, As an American, being tight with money right now, and the rest of the world for that matter, I guess what I'm looking for is where's an answer to the situation that's going there?
Well, one thing, let me just sort of direct this in one particular way, and Professor Dupuy, and that is just to have you talk a little bit more about aid. I think while on the one hand it's true that some pretty big numbers have been tossed around, that in fact not very much money has actually gone to Haiti. Does anybody know exactly how much money has gone into the country for the relief effort?
Well, there's a difference that needs to be made between money that's donated to non-governmental organizations, the NGOs, and the monies that are allocated for spending by the Haitian government or by the Interim Haiti Recovery Commission. those are two different issues. The monies that private citizens, like this gentleman who's on the phone, is talking about, much of that goes to non-governmental organizations to do various kinds of work in Haiti, from providing health care to helping with housing, helping with water, helping with psychological counseling, and a whole host of non-governmental organization services that are being provided. And much of that money comes from both private but also some government donations. The USAID gives quite a bit of money to NGOs to operate in Haiti. Now, those organizations receive the monies directly. That money does not go to the Haitian government, and they use that money as they see fit. And that's the point that I was making before, that there are many reports that show not only that not all the money that's donated to these organizations goes for work in Haiti, a lot of it is, much of it is not, and these organizations operate completely autonomously, independently from the Haitian government, and so they're not accountable to the Haitian government, and neither are they accountable to the people who give the money. They might be accountable to their boards or to the people who run them, but there is also the problem with transparency. What exactly happens with that money if not all of it is being spent to Haiti? Who is benefiting from it, and so on? So, and then that's a very important question, because one of the side effects that this has also in Haiti is that many of these NGO folks who are in Haiti are causing problems with rental housing, where they're able to pay higher costs than Haitians can for the houses that they can rent. They live life in Haiti while they're there, because they have more money to spend than average Haitians do, and it's not exactly clear how much of the money is being actually used to deliver services for the people that they're ostensibly serving. So that's a complicated issue, and there are very many different organizations that have very different results. Some, for example, like Partners in Health and so on, are doing very important work with the Haitian people that they're working with, and in many ways are working directly with Haitians to enable them to build the capacity to take over the continuing delivery services once these organizations leave. The Cubans have been doing exactly the same thing with training Haitian medical doctors and sending them back to Haiti to work with in the countryside of Haiti and so on. And so there are different. I don't want to paint an entirely similar picture for all organizations, but especially the big organizations, the big major international NGOs, it's questionable how much of their money actually is seeing the light of day in Haiti itself. Now, as for the monies that are being given by foreign governments, most of that is not going to the Haitian government either. It is going to the Interim Haiti Commission, which is in charge of using that money for reconstruction and rebuilding and other priorities. That is not something that the Haitian government directly itself controls. And that's been part of the complaint, that only a small proportion of that money has been delivered and not much of it has been used in actual reconstruction projects.
And just to turn then to the question of the government, I suppose it's worth making the point that it wasn't a well functioning government before.
Correct.
And the government also was damaged. The presidential palace was
correct.
Damaged, and it's still waiting to be torn down, I guess.
Right.
And
all the ministries have been damaged.
All the many government workers were
right.
killed. They're
killed.
They're among
correct.
Those people who right. were killed. So
right.
the government itself.
That's right.
Was seriously affected by
exactly.
the quake.
And before the earthquake, it was already a government that was not very responsible, to the Haitian, the majority of Haitians. Most of the services it provided went to the wealthier sectors of Haitian society. And it's a government that never really faced up its responsibilities to respond to the needs of its citizens. And it was, already a very weak and, yes, quite corrupt government before, and it continues to be, but it can't. It's not actually a government that is, shall we say, running the place right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, given how bad things were last fall, one wonders why it is they decided to try to go ahead with the election at all. Was that actually important that they try to hold the election, or could you
right.
actually have held one under those circumstances?
Well, that's a good question. There were many different views of that in Haiti. The international community, for some reason, wanted the elections so that they could say that they're dealing with the legitimate government. And the question, the problem was that Préval's term was ending in February, is going to end in February 2011, and the thorny question was whether you could continue with a government that is not elected, that is basically whose term has run out, and what do you put in its place. Now, given that Préval had not assumed power until May of 2006, when he was elected, he claimed that at least legitimately he could continue until May of 2011. But given the unpopularity of the administration ever since the earthquake and its lackluster response to it, people have been very dissatisfied and have been demanding for a change of government. And that's why there was also internal pressure to hold the elections in the hope that a more representative, more legitimate government would come out of it. But now we know that the elections were flawed, and the question is whether the government that does come out of it will have legitimacy and support of the majority of Haitians. That remains to be seen.
Our guest in this hour focus is Alex Dupuy. He is a sociologist at Wesleyan University, that's in Connecticut. He chairs the African American Studies program there. He has written a lot on social, economic, political developments in Haiti and the Caribbean. And we're talking about Haiti. A year ago tomorrow, was struck by a very, very serious earthquake, the worst in a couple of hundred years. Hundreds of thousands of people were killed. Over something like 180,000 homes were destroyed. More than a million people are still homeless. And the prospects, at least here in the near term, seem pretty dim. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You can also send us an email if you'd like to do that, will-talk@illinois.edu. Also, just would like to mention that there will be a number of programs about Haiti on public television tonight, and you can see them, including among them a program from the series Frontline, which is tonight at 8 o'clock. We'll be airing them on our companion station, WILL-TV. So if you're interested, you can, I'm sure, go to our web page, will.illinois.edu, and get more information on those programs, or you can just tune in. And questions here, again, are welcome, too, if you'd like to join us. I hate to be so negative, but I really wonder whether if we had the same conversation a year from now, we would be talking about now it's 2 years after the earthquake,
right.
and that things are still going to be very difficult. One would hope that we wouldn't still have a million people living in tents.
Right.
But what sort of rebuilding could be talking about? I think I read somewhere that someone had projected that even to get half of the rubble removed would take continuing efforts until October. And at that point in the fall, there would still be half of it to go.
Right, correct. The estimates are that it'll take about 2 years to clear off, clear out the rubble. Now, there's been some small, bright spots. Some areas that were devastated are seeing rebuilding. For example, there was a famous market. It's called the Iron Market in Port-au-Prince that was devastated, and it's been rebuilt with private donations. And that's a landmark in Port-au-Prince where, thousands of local merchants go sell their wares, their foods, and other goods and so on. It's a very popular place in Port-au-Prince. So that's seeing a comeback, and hopefully that'll continue. And the bright spot on the homeless, people who've been made homeless, is that the actual figure that just came out is that now 800,000 people are still living in camps, down from 1.5 million. So about half of the population now has been rehoused somewhere, though exactly where they are being rehoused is not entirely clear, but at least they're no longer in the camps. And part of the problem with rebuilding new housing is the land question and who owns actually the land on which those houses are being built, and if people are going to be relocated to new housing, who's going to pay for their housing and who's going to actually own the housing and so forth. So it becomes much more complicated when one looks actually at the question of land title, ownership titles, and the bureaucratic aspect of it becomes significantly difficult to iron out.
What really, one of the things that seems particularly distressing here is that it doesn't really seem that there are people who are talking about the need in Haiti, mm-hmm. and we have people like Bill Clinton who have been involved in trying to organize the effort to provide aid to Haiti, and yet at the same time, it doesn't. There seem to be a lack of people who are really representing the interests of Haiti in the international community.
Correct. And it's not a matter of ill will necessarily. It's a matter of interest, whose interests they are really representing and whose interests they are serving. And that's been part of the problem all along. That is, the policies that have been fostered in Haiti had nothing to do with Haiti per se. They had to do with a vision of how the international market and the global market should work by those who control it.
Hmm. And is it likely that is going to change very much, that idea about
how development should look. Because the international community has its dogmatic view of how markets work and how Haiti should fit into the global division of labor, and there's no rethinking of that going on either by the current administration or by the major financial institutions like the World Bank and the IMF. They're still continuing to push the same dogma of free market, the free competition, as the best way to achieve development. Yet we know the results of that. And as I said, even President Clinton himself admitted that everywhere these policies have been tried have not really worked. Right. Yet they're continuing to push them.
And certainly one of the problems you talked earlier about how much now, how much food Haiti has to import.
Correct.
As a result of a number of things, over the years, a lot of natural disaster, environmental problems connected to deforestation. The country has really lost its ability to feed itself, and now it depends on food imports.
Right.
And if we have an economic kind of strategy that says, what we really need to do is set up little factories around Haiti and have people make, piece together blue jeans or whatever it is that they're doing, that's really not going to develop a kind of agricultural infrastructure that would do something like maybe make it possible again for people to grow enough food to feed themselves.
Correct. And Haiti certainly, despite all that you mentioned, has the capacity to rebuild its agriculture. As I said, as late as 1986, 1987, it was producing 80% of the food it consumed.
Hmm.
But the policies since then have changed, which now it only produces about 42%.
We're coming down to just a couple of minutes left. I do have one more caller here. Let's get them in Champagne.
Sure.
Line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I have a question. I think it's real important. President Clinton, I know, is working over there. How effective is he right now, or can he be in the future?
Well, right now it doesn't seem to be very effective because not much of the money that the organization that he co-chairs has received is being spent, and the projects that they have identified so far have not gotten off the ground. So it remains to be seen. They've only met four times, and the projects that they've identified to be started have been very, 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 very slow to get off the ground. So the question remains, now that there's going to be a change of government, how the IHRC, the Interim Haiti Recovery Commission that he co-chairs, will function.
I hate to end on such a negative note, though I guess has to be realistic. At the same time, I wonder, have we expected too much for the last year? Are we dwelling too much on the negative?
It could be. But it is a very drastic situation. And of course, people were expecting things to turn around faster, and in some ways that may have been unrealistic. But at the same time, one would have thought that at least in terms of making progress in removing the rubble and starting to rebuilding some of the infrastructure would have gone farther than it has.
Well, we're going to have to leave it at that. I want to mention once again that on our companion television station, WILL Television, there will be three programs on tonight dealing with Haiti. Nova at 7, Frontline at 8, Independent Lands at 9. So you might tune in for those programs. Our guests here in this first hour of Focus, Alex Dupuy, he's a sociologist and chairs the African-American Studies Program at Wesleyan University. And Professor Dupuy, thank you very much for talking with us.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for having me.